a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Called the House Taxation Committee to order. Good morning, everybody. Those of you who have joined us, I do apologize for the scheduling change. Those of you listening on the internet that have had dead air for the last 45 minutes, time to wake up and tune in. We will have, as was indicated on the schedule outside, we will have a slight change. We will take up any out-of-town testimony on House Joint Resolution 1003. However, we will not be hearing from the main proponent or taking any action on that bill today. We will take up House Bill 1173 and then Senate Bill 145. We'll be proceeding in that order. I'd like to remind everybody to please turn off your cell phones. The fine for a cell phone infraction is jerky. We haven't had any yet, so it's kind of disappointing. I will ask the secretary at this time to call the roll.
Representatives Kirschman,
here.
Feinstein,
here.
Peterson,
here.
Henhoff,
here.
Solem,
here.
Latterell,
here.
Norstrup,
here.
Rosum,
here.
Rasmussen,
here.
Erickson,
here.
Duvall,
here.
Miller,
here.
Russell,
here.
Wick, Greenfield.
Here.
Mr. Chairman, a quorum is present.
We do have a quorum present. I'm sure that everybody has taken a moment to peruse the minutes of the previous meeting. Is there a motion to adjourn? Been moved by Representative Duvall. I'm sorry. To approve. My mistake. Been motioned by Representative Duvall and seconded by Representative Solem to approve the minutes of the previous meeting. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed will say no. That motion is carried. A reminder, if you're going to testify on any of the bills, please sign in at the podium in the back. And with that, I believe we're prepared to dive right in. This time we will call for proponent testimony on House Bill 1173. 1173 is an act to establish an education property tax credit program. Good morning, Representative Kopp.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. You're looking pretty dapper this morning. I would think
always
that you were that as well dressed as you are this morning that you were married, but I know better, so.
Yeah, I clean up all by myself pretty well, huh?
I think, Mr. Chair, you do a better job than I do. If my wife doesn't give me a hand, I seem to end up with kind of out of place here and there. Anyway, 1173 is an act to establish an education property tax program. By the way, I'm Don Kopp, State Representative, District 35, which is Rapid City, part of Box Elder and Rapid Valley. 1173, an act to establish an education property tax program. On Section 1, Line 3, any owner of a property that is subject to taxation pursuant to Chapter 10-4 may receive a property tax credit to be applied toward any property tax levied on the property for the school district in which the property is located. The reduction is based on education expenses the owner has incurred for any child who meets the following qualifications. Number one, the child is at least 5 years old but not older than 18. And number two, the child is a kindergarten through 12th grade student enrolled in a non-public school, or the child is receiving alternative instruction pursuant to 13-27-3. And we feel we have a good bill here, Mr. Chairman. And I'll be brief because of the action that we're going to take on the bill, but the nuts and bolts of the bill is that this bill, if passed, would provide a 40% tax credit write-off. So if you are a business or you are a parent that's sending or sponsoring a child in a private school, you would be able to apply 40% of the amount allocated by the state. In other words, if the state district for that particular school district is $4,100. As a property or a property owner, a parent who's sending a child to a private school, he or she could reduce or take a tax credit of 40% of that $4,100. In other words, about $1,600 they would be able to write off as a tax credit toward the expenses, the tuition, the books, et cetera, that they would incur while sending their child to that school. We also feel that businesses who sponsor kids to private schools would have the same right to do so, because it's an expense to them. Presently, there are 8,648 kids enrolled in various private schools throughout South Dakota. And if we use just a smaller figure of 4,100 as an allocation, private schools are saving the state of South Dakota a minimum of $35,456,800 annually. While the public school system in South Dakota also receives $368,325,562 in state aid. And we believe that it's only fair that parents and businesses who are sponsoring kids in private schools have a bit of a write-off, a tax credit for their costs. With that, I think that as I mentioned earlier at the start, we have a good bill here, but I believe we can make it better after a long meeting with some of the constituents involved in this bill. We would ask the committee to table the bill. We're going to take it back, and we think we can come back next year with a better bill. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would request that you table the bill.
Thank you, Representative Kopp. I appreciate that. Certainly didn't expect that. Normally, I guess it's been my experience that when the prime sponsor comes forward and asks for his or her bill to be tabled, that the committee, instead of entertaining further proponent or opponent testimony, move right to final disposition. So a tabling motion would be in order.
Sure.
Been moved by Representative Solem, seconded by Representative Feinstein to table House Bill 1173. Tabling motion is a non-debatable motion. All those in favor will say aye. Those opposed will say no, and the secretary will call the roll.
Representatives Kirschman.
Aye.
Feinstein.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Hunhoff.
Aye.
Solem.
Aye.
Latterell.
Aye.
Norstrup.
Aye.
Rosum.
Aye.
Rasmussen.
Aye.
Erickson.
Aye.
Duval.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Russell.
Aye.
Wick. Greenfield.
Aye.
Mr. Chairman, that's 14 ayes, one excused.
The motion, having received a majority of the members-elect, is declared passed, and House Bill 1173 is so tabled. Always unexpected twists and turns in the ever-exciting Taxation Committee. Says the Chair of Commerce. We could have started at 9:15. Senate Bill 145 is now up, and because I was caught off guard, I didn't have a page go and get the prime sponsors, so the committee will be at ease for just a couple minutes while we go and round up Senator Norstrup and Representative Wick. Is an act to revise certain provisions concerning the content of annual property tax bill. We'll take proponent testimony on Senate Bill 145. Senator Norstrup is with us. Welcome, sir. Are you prepared to sling this bill? Representative Wick is in another hearing. He's got a pretty big bill up, and they haven't moved to final action yet.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee. I understand Representative Wick's got a big bill up, but we've got a big bill here, too, so just so you understand. Mr. Chairman, if I could ask for some latitude as I'd like to have some interaction with the committee as I go through this. Would that be acceptable?
Well, absolutely. We've got an hour to kill. We didn't expect the last bill to be disposed of so quickly.
This is a Brown County bill. and I've got 9 questions on it. And what I'd like to do is just take you through, and I was going to do this individually, but I thought I'd do it as a group project this morning. If you'd be willing to just have somebody on the committee tell me what number one is, civil.
I guess it's up to us now.
Let me help you out here, because I didn't know the answer. I looked it up. And civil has many definitions. It can mean polite. It can mean courteous. It can mean mannerly. It can mean, like in civil war, it can be between citizens of the same country. Or it could, the last meaning is, it could be, this is a dictionary definition, it could be civilian, of the civilian versus the military or of the church. So those are the different definitions of civil. Is anybody on the committee want to take a stab at what that, why we're paying that particular tax?
Apparently it's a polite tax.
Exactly. Absolutely, nice. Mr. Chairman, you are right again. And the answers, I haven't checked into that. I don't know the answer. So we're all on the same boat on that one. Let me take you to number two. Some of you will probably know this one. JRWDD.
James River Water Development District.
Thank you. So we're one for one. If we could have somebody keep score, it would be helpful. The next one is general. Anybody take a stab at that? Mr. Chairman, a general fund for somebody was the answer. Would we accept that as a precise enough answer?
I'm going to turn to you, Mr. Judge.
Wait, anybody else on the committee want to take a crack at that one?
Looks like a big number.
Mr. Chairman, that is the general fund of the county. And the reason I know that is this is coming from the county, so it's their general fund. The next one is number four, SWSLSTX. That is correct. Representative Feinstein said solid waste sales tax.
You must have given him a little tutoring prior to this.
Mr. Chairman, I think that'd probably be correct.
Right on.
Yeah, I used to live in Brown County. I understand
that. School CO. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We do have a correct answer down at this end. It's school capital outlay. Next up is number six, which is school SE. Very good. Absolutely correct. Here's one. Now, you've been on a winning streak. You've got 3 or 4 in a row here. The next one, if anybody can clarify to me the difference between fire and HECLA fire. Once again, the person with the answers don't know the answer. So we'll give you a correct one on that one, although I assume the answer is we've got 2 fire districts overlapping. And the last one is SW. Southwest is not the correct answer. Solid waste. And I guess I do have another one. The last one is, what are the totals? For example, this is a property tax for the schools, the counties, the fires, the townships. For example, what's the school total? And the answer is you'd have to add up multiple ones. First, you'd have to decide which ones apply to schools. For example, does civil apply to schools? Yes or no? We don't know the answer. So I guess my point, and thank you for the latitude and the informality of what we did today. This was brought to me by a taxpayer in Brown County, and the taxpayer basically said to me, I don't get it. I don't understand. Is there any way we could be a little more clear as to why we're paying this particular property tax? And so we drafted a bill, and what the bill says is this. 2 things. Basically, if you have an abbreviation, first of all, try not to do an abbreviation, but if you have to do an abbreviation, further down the page there's room to define the abbreviation. So SW would be solid waste, or could be defined further down the page. But just less abbreviations, more abbreviations defined. And then the last thing it says is, give me totals. Give me a school total. Give me a county total. Give me totals so that the taxpayer can quickly look at this, understand why he's paying the taxes, And just basically, the bill is an effort to be more clear when you're asking the taxpayer for money. Do a better job of explaining it. And with that, Mr. Chairman, thank you for your indulgence this morning.
Thank you, Senator Nordstrom. Is there further proponent testimony on Senate Bill 145? Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the House Taxation Committee. My name is Melissa Forrest, and I am a registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Retailers Association. We also rise in support for Senate Bill 145 for many of the reasons previously stated. We believe Senate Bill 145 creates transparency between the property taxpayer and the separate entities that will be receiving these funds, provides clarity, open and honest communication, and lets the individuals know what they're being taxed for. With that, Mr. Chair, I'll stand by for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Forrest. Further proponent testimony on Senate Bill 145. Further proponent testimony, Senate Bill 145. Is there any opponent testimony on Senate Bill 145? Good morning, Mr. Tellinghausen.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Roger Tellinghausen on behalf of the South Dakota Association of County Officials. First of all, I just want to be very clear about two things. One, the auditors who I represent are all in favor of transparency with regards to these bills, and we certainly understand Senator Nofstrup's exercise about the abbreviations. It's confusing, it's difficult to understand, and certainly it makes sense to amend the existing statute to require that counties include within their tax notices some legend, if you will, that explains what all of the abbreviations are. We don't have any problem with that. The problem that we do have, though, and the reason I have to get up in opposition is only because when this bill went through committee over in the Senate, it didn't have everything that's in this bill now. There was an amendment that was put on the bill on the floor of the Senate that the auditors believe necessarily will cost the counties more money, and that's the reason we bring it to your attention. And the amendment appears at beginning at line 7 and down on line 8, where over at the far right-hand side of line 7, the word each appears, and then down on line 8 where it says levy and the tax attributable to the levy. The objection that has been expressed by our auditors is that the cost of reprogramming or programming to generate tax bills that will accomplish what this piece of legislation will now require is going to have to be borne by the counties. It's not shared by the various taxing authorities that the counties send tax notices on behalf of, but it'll all be borne by the county itself with no way to recover that. As I said, it won't be a difficult issue for the counties to include a legend that explains all of the abbreviations. I'm told also by my auditors that most of the time, first of all, there aren't that many occasions where people are calling and asking for explanations, but it does happen. In Pennington County, for instance, our auditor indicated that they received approximately 10 calls, or excuse me, that the treasurer received approximately 10 calls, and they were referred to the auditor, who then answered the questions and explained the various provisions of the tax notice, and as I said, answered their questions. In Hand County, now a smaller county, they received several calls about valuations, which are really the Director of Equalization's area of expertise. So those calls were referred to the Director of Equalization. There weren't calls about the levies. There weren't calls about the tax notices themselves. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to stand by for questions. But to be clear, the County Officials Associations only issue with the present form of Senate Bill 145 is the amendment that was put on the Senate floor, which, as I say, begins at the end of line 7 and runs through on line 8, where it says each levy and the tax attributable to the levy. That's the part that was added on the floor of the Senate that our auditors are frankly concerned about. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, sir. Further opponent testimony on Senate Bill 145. Any further opponents? Senate Bill 145. Seeing none, Senator Nordstrom, would you care to rebut?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's reasonable to get a total. I think a taxpayer reasonably would want to know what's the total taxes that I'm paying to my school, what's the total taxes I'm paying to my county. So there's two ways to do that. One is to have the computer in the county do the math. The other is to have the taxpayers do the math. In Brown County, I would assume we've got about 10,000 taxpayers. I would assume the least expensive way to get it done is with the computer instead of a hand calculator at my kitchen table. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. We'll now close the public testimony on Senate Bill 145. We'll open it up for questions of the committee. Representative Duvall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the prime sponsor, please. Thank you. Senator Nofstrup, what would be your reaction if we returned the bill to the way it was first introduced? We strip out the Senate amendment. As I read it, the taxpayers would still have a total, and they would still have definitions.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
The representative is right. The original bill did ask for a total. So that hasn't changed. This was asked for as clarification and better way of describing what we're trying to do. And actually, the committee asked me for this clarification. So we could go back to the original, but many people believe that this is more crisp and clear and more. So not a big dog in the fight. Either way works for me, but.
Representative Rosem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have passed out, and I hope that you get one, how Davidson County does their taxes, which is very clear what goes to the city, what goes to the county, what goes to... I'm wondering if you think if maybe this should be handled at your county level rather than trying to put something in statute. This is very, very clear. I know that we get a few calls, but those are handled. And just as an FYI, if all the levies had to be posted, this is two sides of the page. It's about 40 different levies that come out of Davidson County for all the different districts. It would be impossible, really, to, I mean, you know, we get it now on a card that says this is what your taxes are. This is how it breaks down. This is a copy of that. Very simple, to the point. I guess my question to you is, should this maybe not be at the Brown County level and saying, hey, there's really a much simpler way to do this?
Senator Nordstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Being that there's 66 counties and there's some counties doing it right and there's some counties doing it wrong, there's a pretty good chance it's not a Brown County issue only. There's a reasonable chance that there are multiple counties that need to remove the abbreviations and do a better job of giving totals.
Any further questions in the committee? Representative Latterell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Mr. Tellenhusen. Apologize if I mistook your last name there. My question is regarding the software used. Is there how many different software types are used around the counties, and was there any kind of costs given to you by the people you represent in terms of how much it would cost to update the software?
Mr. Chairman. Representative Lateral, thank you. I apologize. I don't have an answer for you. I don't know how many different software programs are in use out throughout the 66 counties, and I don't have a cost figure for you. I was more or less relaying to you the concerns that have been raised by some of the auditors. They didn't give me specific numbers, however. I'm sorry.
Thank you. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Say your name again, could you please?
Tellenhusen.
Tellenhusen.
Yes.
Mr. Tellenhusen, couldn't all the counties use the same software program? I mean, couldn't they make that available to each other so everybody's on the same page if this is what's trying to be accomplished?
Mr. Chair.
I mean, if there's a county using a good software program instead of going back to base one, couldn't that be used?
Go ahead, Mr. Tellenhusen.
Thank you. Representative Miller, I think assuming that counties are using different software programs, and I don't know for certain whether that is the case, there certainly would be a cost to those counties that would have to change over their software program. What that cost would be, I can only speculate as to. I really think, though, that the more important feature of this bill, as it was originally introduced, was to include some type of explanation or legend, if you will, as to what the various abbreviations are. And the counties are more than willing to include that, because that, frankly, can be included on a little separate sheet of paper that's put in the envelope with the tax notice itself. I think Representative Rosen has made a real good argument for me in terms of, if the bill is allowed to pass in its present form and counties are required to set out all of the different levies, the cost to the counties to do that is certainly going to go up. I don't know how much. Obviously, in the bigger counties, it will be more. But that's the concern, I guess, on the part of the counties at this point.
Okay. Well, follow-up.
Follow-up. Please. Go ahead, Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On that note, are we at a point where this probably should be addressed to being done?
Mr. Chair, Representative Miller, this is one of those issues that we see oftentimes come before the legislature where it's a constituent issue. And I don't mean to belittle that in any sense of the word, but I guess my request to this legislature would be that please give the counties an opportunity to address this themselves, because some counties are already addressing it and some can certainly address it. And I don't know that it's become such an issue statewide that we need to involve the legislative process in passing a law that's going to increase costs to counties where it may not be necessary to do that in most cases.
Thank you.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question for Mr. Tellison, if I may.
Go ahead.
Thank you. How do you suggest that the counties have more uniformity in the statements that are sent out? Now, my statements in Doolittle County and Grant County, I can look at them and I can tell exactly what all my taxes are for. This one from Brown County is probably the most convoluted one I've ever seen. How are you suggesting? Are you suggesting that the county association address this problem?
Mr. Chairman?
Please.
Representative Peterson, yes. If this legislature would give us an opportunity to do that, I believe that our association, and specifically the auditor contingent within our association, would be willing to do that. I certainly understand taxpayers' concern, or if they're confused over the tax notices that they receive. I don't believe that that's the case in every county. And so if we could have an opportunity to try and develop some uniformity within the auditor's ranks themselves, I believe that may be the preferred approach, as opposed to legislating a specific fix that ends up necessarily costing counties more money than it would have to. And I do believe, if I could just add, Representative Peterson, that each county could clearly and easily, without much cost, include a legend that will explain what the various abbreviations that are used in a tax notice mean. Thank you.
Representative Hunhoff.
Just to clarify, if we strike the Senate amendment, you think that gives enough latitude where it's workable for the county officials?
Mr. Chairman? Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
I do. Yes.
Any further questions to the committee? Any further questions? Seeing none, I will close that portion of the committee hearing, and we will open it up for committee discussion or action. Representative Latterell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the sponsor for bringing this bill before us. And I wanted to comment on the costs that were mentioned in regards to upgrading software to take care of this issue. one of the things that I find in the software industry is that a lot of times there's more flexibility than the users of the software may know in making modifications to the program. And so in many cases, I believe that within their current software, they would find a way to include this information in the report without incurring any kind of extreme additional costs. And I'd also say that we also had a bill in here previously that would require counties not to have to publish the minutes of various things, and we required them to publish those detailed information in the public notice. So all we're doing here would be requiring counties to publish information that they're sending out anyway. And if that puts an additional cost on the county, I would just consider that we've already required in previous committees them to publish information at a cost to them. And this would be significantly less since they're already sending it out. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Rosen.
Thank you. I look at this bill at this point as though it's an unfunded mandate. I have it originated in the state in the SOS office. Thank you, Secretary of State's office. And it was unbeknownst to the auditors throughout my district and throughout many of your districts. And I have a sheaf of papers now that, as those auditors had corresponded back and forth saying, what does this really mean? In the first place, software is costly to a county. I know that there's constant scrambles to upgrade, and it's tax dollars. It has to do that. I really think that if you allow the auditors to figure this out, they do work together very well as a group. And I think if you let them figure it out, I think they can do it. I mean, do we really want to put more into statute? We've been so busy trying to clean up what's already there. Do we really want to put something more in statute that could be handled at the county level? I would encourage a no vote.
At this point, there isn't a motion, so we'll see if you want a no vote when that motion is made. Representative Hunhoff.
I would move to amend.
State your amendment, please.
And I would strike the Senate amendment.
The motion is to rescind, essentially, Amendment 145-FB as passed by the Senate on the Senate floor. And there was a second, I believe. Let me state just one moment. The motion was made by Representative Hunhoff and seconded by Representative Duvall. State your point, Representative Feinstein.
The point is, if we look at the whole Senate amendment, Mr. Chairman, if we look at the whole amendment, there are some things on page 2 that I don't know. I haven't looked to see if those are things we want to get out either. that maybe. To make sure we're doing this right, it should just be the language of the first paragraph on the page 1 of the amendment. I mean, I just so we are doing the right thing, because there are some typos and things looks like we corrected in the Senate amendment on page 2. I've got it here if you want to.
I move that we remove the Senate amendment as it pertains to page 1.
Bingo.
Yeah, on line 2, it appears that there was a sentence that was stricken. The county treasurer shall provide to a taxpayer a tax levy sheet if the tax levy breakdown is not shown on the tax bill or upon the taxpayer's request, and that was stricken.
Yeah, that's the whole amendment. This is probably the main thing
they said. I would tend to agree that the portion that has come up for discussion here in the committee during the committee hearing is the language as it's printed online, or as it was originally printed on page 1, and how that was amended. The motion, as I stated, it was to rescind the Senate amendment. I believe the proper way to proceed would essentially be to make a motion to amend the amendment by...
I withdraw my motion.
Okay. Representative Hunhoff withdrew his motion. If Representative Duvall would agree to that, she agrees. Would there be a motion pertaining to the language online or on page 1?
Mr. Chair, I would move that...
I'm going to ask LRC staff to weigh in at this point. I think he has some information that will help to clarify the matter.
The changes that were made on page 2 was if the taxpayer got a report similar to what you got, which represents Rosam handed out, which just showed all the school as one levy. What it asks on page 2, if the taxpayer goes in and asks for a breakdown of those various school levies, they were required to provide that to the taxpayer. And since on page 1 we made it mandatory that they give this breakdown, that sentence was no longer needed. So this provides an opportunity for the taxpayer to get some additional information. And so I think you'd want to strike all the Senate amendments.
And I did misspeak when I said that it was deleting that sentence. It was removing the overstrikes relative to that sentence. So is there now a motion?
I would move to... Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
I would move to strike the Senate amendment.
All right, it's been moved to strike the Senate amendment, and seconded. That was made by Representative Hunhoff and seconded by Representative Feinstein. I do appreciate the LRC staff's clarification. Makes perfect sense, actually. So is there any further discussion on that amendment? Seeing none, Representative Russell.
I may be a little bit behind here, but so explain to me, or if someone would explain to me, exactly what the amendment will do in the bill. Because I don't necessarily have that amendment in front of me. And I've been trying to follow the discussion, and I haven't.
Well, Representative Russell, that's why you should have brought your computer or had it fired up.
Oh, I've got it, but...
What it does is essentially it restores everything to the original printed version, as introduced and as passed through the Senate committee. Instead of the language that's in there presently, it'll state on line 7, however, the property tax bill shall at least provide a tax total for each taxing district. A definition shall be provided for any abbreviation used to describe any entity imposing a tax or special assessment. It's rather uncommon to do this, but Representative Northrup, I'm sorry, Senator, not you, Senator Northrup, if you would like to approach and give any clarification as to how the bill came out of the Senate committee, that would be great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm amazed that we're filling the hour just as you requested at the beginning. So
it really wasn't a request.
Here's my understanding. The original bill, before amended, was trying to get to two goals. One is to do a better job of dealing with abbreviations, and also to get to totals. Only two goals of the original bill. The committee asked me to go further with an amendment, and what the amendment did was added a third goal, which is to do the levy breakdown, which in the Brown County issue, that's not a problem because we've already got a breakdown of the 13 that occur in Brown County. So the original dealt with two problems, the abbreviation and the totals, which was my original goal, and then the committee asked me to go into breakdowns with the amendment.
I appreciate that clarification. Is there further discussion of the committee?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hunhoff.
Thanks for your patience on this. Well, I don't think we should micromanage, but I think it's appropriate, as a bill sponsor suggested, that we lay out some broad parameters. In fact, the statutes already do that, and he's just adding to those statutes that we give a broad idea of what the counties should do to provide information. So I think it's a pretty decent bill as originally written. I think before we take that third step, we should provide some funding for the unfunded mandate. So let's not take the third step. Let's do the first two and see how that works.
Thank you, Representative Rosam.
I would just like to clarify, if now that I finally got this thing working again, so I do have my computer, it just doesn't always do what it's supposed to do. So levies, individual levies, do not have to be included on the tax bill if we do the original version, correct? Correct, okay.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Further discussion on the motion to amend? Seeing none, all those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed will say no.
No.
That motion has carried. House Bill Senate Bill 145, as amended, is up for further discussion or action.
Mr. Chairman, I move due pass.
It's been moved due pass by Representative Duvall, seconded by Representative Latterell. Further discussion on that, Representative Duvall?
I just want to echo what the representative from Yankton said. I think you summed it up very well. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Representative Latterell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is a fantastic bill. I think that when we are leery of passing additional laws, a lot of times those laws are restricting what individuals and citizens can do, but sometimes when we are telling another government body what they must do to provide good government and good information to the taxpayers, those can be good laws, so I'd urge support of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion? Further discussion? I'd just like to offer this to Senator Nordstrom and those other folks who are involved and interested in this bill. I think you've come with a good and workable bill. Obviously, the Senate pushed it a little too far according to opponent testimony. The fact that you had taken it to the brink and hadn't heard any opposition, I think, in the Senate shows that, you know, it is a workable situation when the counties when they weigh in and say, hey, this is an unfunded mandate at this point. You know, I think we do have to be cognizant of the any costs that are being pushed down on them. So I think that this bill, as amended, does address any opposition testimony. I think this will help the opposition to find it palatable, and this is why we have the committee process in place, so we can take care of any problems the Senate caused. So with that, any further discussion? Representative Kirschman?
If we vote on this, will we have to have a conference committee between the two?
No. We would send it back if it passes in the fashion that it is currently being considered. And if it passes the floor in that fashion, it'll go back to the Senate for concurrence. They can choose to concur, or they can choose to ask for a conference committee. So there will still be some steps along the way. Any further discussion? Seeing none, those in favor will say aye. Those opposed will say no. And the Secretary will call the roll.
Representatives Kirschman,
aye.
Feinstein,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Hunhoff,
aye.
Solem,
aye.
Latterell,
aye.
Nordstrup,
aye.
Rosem,
no.
Rasmussen,
aye.
Erickson,
aye.
Duvall,
aye.
Miller,
aye.
Russell,
aye.
Wick, Greenfield,
aye.
Mr. Chairman, that is 13 yeas, 1 nay, 1 excused.
So the motion, having received a majority vote of the members-elect, is declared passed. That bill will be taken to the floor by Representative Wick, and that is as amended, by the way. Representative Wick will be carrying it on the floor and in caucus. Representative Hunhoff, would you care to take that to your caucus? I sure appreciate that. Moving forward, we do have, I believe, five bills left to take up as a committee. We will be working on Thursday. It appears that we'll be working on Tuesday as well. We probably could. There's a chance that we can knock all the bills off our slate in one fell swoop. But I'll have to visit with the proponents and opponents. That's correct. I guess I was reminded, and we may well have some folks here who want to testify on House Joint Resolution 1003. Is there out-of-town testimony on House Joint Resolution 1003? All right. Let me announce that, as I stated before, we are going to carry that over at the request of the prime sponsor. There are a couple other bills that are related that that haven't gone through their committee yet, the other committee. So House Joint Resolution 1003, let me pull it up. My computer turns out is acting a little slowly to Representative Rosen. It is a joint resolution making formal application to Congress to call a limited constitutional convention for the sole purpose of proposing a federal balanced budget amendment. I'll call first for proponent testimony from out of town. Further, or any proponent testimony from out of town? Seeing none, I will open it up for opposition testimony from those who have come from out of town. Good morning, sir. Please state your name and proceed with your testimony. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Eldon Stahl. I'm from Mitchell, testifying on behalf of myself. And does this work all right? Okay, thanks. I, of course, come in opposition to this resolution. I know some of you have supported it. A lot of times I see things like this, people support them certainly out of good intentions. They want to, for example, they see that it's calling for a federal balanced budget, which a lot of us sounds good on the surface, that we would want something like that. We know that the spending has gotten very much out of hand. But I have a couple of concerns about this that maybe haven't been considered sufficiently, so I'd like to bring those up. The first issue is maybe it should be an obvious one, but the question, why do we amend the Constitution? And, of course, the simple answer to that is that if the Founding Fathers put Article 5 into the Constitution, in case there was something, a problem, that arose that was due to something lacking, an imperfection in the Constitution. They tried to get it as perfect as they could. However, they did leave an amendment process in there. And they left two different ways to do that. The first way is the way we've always done it. Two-thirds of each House of Congress pass it or propose it and then goes to the states. So that raises the question, is the fact that we have an unbalanced budget something that arises out of an imperfection within the Constitution? One indication of that may be the fact that this is a relatively recent phenomenon that our debt has gotten out of hand. Our Constitution, of course, has been around for over 200 years, but it's only in the last, generation or roughly that we've had this significant problem. So something to consider, is this something that arises out of, is the Constitution really the problem, or is it lack of adherence to the Constitution? There are quite a few limitations on what Congress can spend money on, but I would submit that, maybe we could have a show of hands. How many of you think that the Congress is really doing a good job at adhering to the Constitution today? So if they're not adhering well to it, should we think that amending the Constitution, that new amendment, would be adhered to as well? So that's something to consider. Also, I see, even in this resolution, exceptions, economic calamity, war. It's been claimed that we're at war since 9/11, when technically we don't have a declaration of war. Economic calamity can be defined, basically till it almost assures that we will never have a balanced budget, even if we were to assume that this would become an amendment. And the other side of this is that looking at the route of a constitutional convention. Proponents of this resolution will claim that it is possible for states to control or influence the agenda of such a convention, were it to be called. Now, I'll try to be brief. I appreciate your patience, but this would place the states in a dominant role in the amendment process, which is something that the founders would not want to happen. When Article 5 was written, they considered a couple things. First, they placed into Article 5 the process, which we know is two-thirds of Congress and then three-fourths of states ratify. But then there was the objection that, well, if we allow only Congress to initiate the process, then that would give them kind of an advantage, that the ability to amend the Constitution would kind of be in Congress's court, and any amendment that might be viewed as threatening Congress's power would be looked down upon, probably not proposed by Congress. And some say, well, okay, that's a good reason to support a balanced budget amendment, because they're not pushing that right now, right? Well, of course, the other issue is this something that arises out of lack of the Constitution or out of imperfection? So they said, well, let's put in the convention process. But at the same time, there were people that said, well, let's have a second convention. Even during the first constitutional convention, they wanted to have a second convention. That idea was voted down. And even during the ratification process, after the Constitution was signed, there were people proposing to have a second convention. And James Madison especially and others said, no, we don't want to open this up. Madison said it would open it up to insidious views, very partisan. And we can imagine what today would happen. Certainly great special interest groups would all want to have their influence on the process. And if you look at Article 5, there are some things that are clear, but there are so many unanswered questions about how this might take place. And, you know, some people say, well, we know how all this would take place, but Article 5, it doesn't say anything about the states being able to propose. It says the convention itself would propose amendments, that Congress, its role after two-thirds of the states would propose, that they would be obligated to call the convention. So we're assuming a lot here. We're assuming that the states would have a dominant role in this process. But that was something that the founders didn't want to happen. They didn't want the Congress to dominate the process, but they also didn't want the states to dominate the process, because any amendment could possibly prejudicially, if that's a word, affect either Congress or the states or both. So this is a compact between the two. So I would strongly urge to oppose this resolution, and I leave with that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Stahl. I appreciate that. Thank you for your patience as well. I do apologize for the scheduling change. Further opponent testimony on House Joint Resolution 1003. Ms. Strong, did you?
Opponent.
Welcome. Hello. Thanks for being here.
Hello, I'm Stephanie Strong from Rapid City, and I'm representing myself. And thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee. Tax Committee. Appreciate you allowing me to speak here. I'll be brief here. It depends on how fast here. I wrote some things down that I thought would be important. And then I also sent all the legislators different links about history on the Constitutional Convention. And I don't know if you guys read it or not, but I did bring some more if anybody is interested in that as well. But I'll just start here. Article 5 of the Constitution states the Congress, whenever two-thirds of both houses shall deem it necessary, shall propose amendments to this Constitution, or on the application of the legislators of two-thirds of the several states, shall call a convention for proposing amendments, which in either case shall be valid to all intents and purposes as part of the Constitution. When ratified by the legislators of three-fourths of the several states, or by conventions in three-fourths thereof, as a one or the other mode of ratification may be proposed by the Congress, provided that no amendment which may be made prior to the year 1808 shall in any manner affect the first and fourth class clauses in the ninth section of the first article, and that no state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. And the point here is 2/3 of the House and the Senate must agree that there needs to be a constitutional amendment. Or 2/3 of the state's legislators must agree that there must be a constitutional amendment. If the House and the Senate agree, that would mean that they have agreed on what needed to be amended, or there would not be a constitutional amendment. Amendments that had no legs to stand on would never be brought to the floor. But in a constitutional convention, anything can be brought before the legislators to be discussed and possibly be forced to a vote. If you happen to pay attention to the November 2012 election, people who wanted a balanced budget amendment were in the minority. But the majority voted for entitlements, deficits, spending, and large government. So if we do decide to do a constitutional convention, we are on a slippery slope that could backfire, especially for a state like South Dakota. That is conservative and has only had 3 votes in the Congress and Senate, compared to California, which has 55 votes, or New York, which has 31 votes. We would be better off to pass legislation that states the federal government cannot enforce, impose, or dictate how funding from the federal government is spent until the federal government has in place a balanced budget and a balanced budget amendment. If the federal government does not fund South Dakota because of this legislation on the basis of per capita spending in other states, this would be a direct discrimination to South Dakota for South Dakota trying to make the federal government become responsible. The 10th Amendment states, "The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states, respectively, or to the people." The federal government is overstepping its boundaries, and it's time for the state legislators to stand up and eliminate all the federal government overreaches of our rights as South Dakota citizens. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Strong. Is there further opponent testimony? Sir, I don't believe you signed in. You come on up, but please state your name, and if we have trouble spelling it, we may ask you to do so.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, the representatives. My name is Mike Boyle. I'm from Avon, South Dakota.
B-O-Y-L-E.
B-O-Y-L-E, correct.
Thank you, sir.
And I'm not going to elaborate anymore because I believe these two individuals did quite well in that area. I just want to communicate that I'm quite fearful of what this possibility could actually take place. As they said already, it could be possibly a runaway convention, and the things in which we desired for this bill to take place would possibly not even be touched. And I think what you're striving, whoever put this bill in the sense of its purpose, is to rein back the federal government, and I totally agree that it needs to happen. But I think the amendment would be far better so that the original Constitution would not be changed in any way. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, sir. Any further opposition testimony on House Joint Resolution 1003? Any further opponent testimony on House Joint Resolution 1003? Seeing none, we will close and we will carry that joint resolution over until a subsequent meeting. Most likely it'll be taken up for action next Tuesday, the way it would appear. With that, I believe a motion to adjourn would be in order. Moved by Representative Sullivan, seconded by Representative Latterell to adjourn. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed will say no. We are adjourned.